Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish. With the view from her Jerusalem window, here's Andrea Simontov.
Accepting that wouldn't be exactly accurate today, would it? There's no Jerusalem windows in sight.
No, I'm actually... Can you hear me, Simon? I have a
perfectly,
weird headset
Andrea,
on.
Perfectly.
Okay, great. No, I'm actually looking out at the roiling waves of the Atlantic Ocean. I'm on the east coast of the United States, actually on Long Island. And it's very beautiful, but very weird to be outside of Israel at this time. We've had a little back and forth, and you know that I believe that this is the week that if anything secular could be deemed holy, these are the holiest days on our calendar. And I'm outside of Israel for good reason, but it doesn't stop my heart from being just a little bit broken.
I want to just share a feeling that I had. Sorry, I'm going off on a tangent here, Andrea, but I know I can with you. I saw a picture today. It was possibly the most banal photograph ever. It was a woman in a bikini on a beach in Tel Aviv, standing up next to her towel, observing the 2 minutes silence. And it just hit so hard that maybe it's the banality of being able to go to a beach that made it so incredibly moving.
Yeah, I'm happy to hear you say that because, you know, I had these thoughts. The survivors, they're dying, Simon. They're dwindling. We could use all the nice words we want, but they're dying off. And for most of us listening who were born after 1948 or were toddlers just prior to, we don't remember a time when there was not Israel. Israel was here. Israel's a given. And the fact is, the amazing thing that you point out is not that somebody in a bikini and doing a day of life, the good life.
Yes.
But it's the fact that we still remember, we're still a generation that can see, that can touch, and the fact that we do go on, that we can be normal. Jews are the most abnormal. We certainly have the excuse to be the most abnormal race on earth. And yet it's the beauty. It's the normalcy of Israel. And we have to hop it. We have to teach the children because you know what? I know that the South African Jewish community, I've always been very impressed because they're a little more connected. Somehow, maybe they can just taste that generation that passed. But American Jews, I know, are so ensconced. They do not know what today is. They do not know. And they even say, you hear it all over, get over it. It happened. Then they bring in other people have suffered. And
I find
you know
that
what?
A mind-blowing comment because if I think about it, I mean, it's in our parents' lifetimes. This is not removed. This is not 3, 4, 5 generations ago. Repeat, it's in our parents' lifetimes. And you talk about American Jewry. My goodness me, Andrea, Poway. These events are happening in America today. What will it take for them to wake up?
You know, I'm not going to use this holy show to, that's a beer together and having my thoughts, and I don't want to bite the hands that feed me. But I will tell you this, that Israel is a remarkable edifice and a remarkable testimony. One other thing I did come across, you know, we drown. We fix our sad feelings by building more museums. You know, the latest monstrosity, the vulgarity, the latest embarrassment is this Museum of Tolerance, smack dab on prime real estate in the heart of Jerusalem. And Rabbi Wein, I came across an essay, I don't remember what I saw it, but he said something that, you know, museums are very nice. We go in and it can touch our heart. It can touch our intellect. It can touch our sense of curiosity and even our passions when we say that anemic, insipid line, never again. You know, how do we make it never again?
Exactly.
But what a museum cannot touch, certainly for Jews who are still bearing witness, it cannot touch the Jewish soul because our soul knows that something happened and something has the potential of happening again and again, never again be damned again and again. And closure is not the Jewish experience. We've never done well with closure. We've done well with surmounting obstacles, rising like titans out of the abyss and creating anew. We're an anomaly. But we have just a few left, a few remaining. So it's not just to not let them starve and to be kind to them, but it's to document the stories, to see them, to be aware that we are looking into the faces of there, but for the grace of God, go every single one of us if we lose that sense of vigilance and indeed get cocky.
Andrew, can I ask you a personal question? Within reason. Oh. Don't worry. I'm not going to embarrass you. And there's no moon questions either, I promise you. No, I was just wondering to what extent your Zionism or your connection to Israel was motivated from a religious perspective as opposed to a post-Holocaust child. I'm wondering, or were these both equally factors in your decision to move to Israel?
Thank you, Simon. Well, actually, my father, may he rest in peace, was a die-hard Zionist, wanted very much to move to Israel when she became a state in 1948. He was the sole support of elderly parents and could not do it, but he bemoaned this. And when I made Aliyah, you know, while the rest of the family sobbed, why people questioned me, his pride, his understanding, there was absolutely no religion. I suspect, although I never spoke about it, I do suspect that my father believed that religion is indeed the opiate of the masses.
Okay.
Right. But my reason for making Aliyah, and if somebody listening today gets that ping, it was crazy. We had always talked about it. I was married to an Israeli who often threatened me, we're going to go move to Israel. Because I was never going to move to Israel while my mother-in-law was still, my mother-in-law of blessed memory was alive, because I knew who the first woman would be and it wasn't me.
But, you know,
I loved her. I loved her dearly. But I remember it was Pesach 1973 and we were at the end of the Seder and we stood up and everybody sang, Hashana haba bi Yerushalayim, next year in Jerusalem. And I put up my hands and it was like I was possessed. It was an out of body experience.
Really?
Wow. And I said, stop, stop. We claim to be authentic. We claim to be honest. The whole Seder has been a prayer and now we finish it with a lie. Do we mean it? Or are we honest? And we say we either are making Aliyah or we don't sing this at the end of our seders because we are not disingenuous. And it was as simple as that. The seed was planted. I put away the Pesach dishes and it took us 2 years to get on a plane. But it was that moment. Hashana haba b'Yerushalayim. It's not Moon River. It's not the soundtrack from West Side Story. It's a fervent prayer. It's ours. We're here next year in Jerusalem. Mean it. And not just a hotel stay. But mean it, because if we don't come here, if we don't come home, if we don't believe our constant prayers, then Simon, our enemies are right. It doesn't belong to us. Who takes a gift and says, I'll open it later? You know, I'm a Jewish woman. I like things in small packages. Well, Israel's got it all. It was as simple as that, Simon. I gave it no other thought. It wasn't if I would go, it was how to make my prayer honest, how to face God, how to face my children.
Wow, Andrea, goosebumps up and down my arms for about the third time today. I don't know. I think your mashallah has just made me very receptive to all sorts of things. Thank you so very much for your time, for making time for us in the US of A. And just before I let you go, I want to read to you from Austin Gibbs, who says, Simon, one of my two favorite ladies on Chai FM. What a way to end the day. I couldn't have phrased it better myself.
I love it. Thank you. Thank you, Austin. Thank you, Simon. And one more thing. I'm also not going to be with you next week. It's been too much. This romance, it's very hard to sustain the relationship, Simon. But I'm going to be in the air again. But then,
okay.
Please God,
then you're
I will
allowed.
Be home. Yes.
Then,
okay.
Then you're allowed. Cheers, Andrea. Thank you so much, as always.
Shabbat shalom. Bye-bye. Sure.